Now, beans, it may surprise you to learn, are not beans. No. Beans, well, they can be common or garden, tinned or free range. Perhaps, though, most excitingly of all, they can be heirloom. Now, meet Steve Sando. Steve and his business, Rancho Gordo. Steve's on a mission to bring the heirloom beans of Mexico, well, perhaps to a table near you. Steve, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
What makes a bean an heirloom bean?
Well, it's a pure seed, so that it means if you plant it in the ground, you're going to get the same plant. And there's a lot of hybrids and even GMOs that if you plant the seed, they're either sterile or it's sort of a crapshoot what's going to happen. But with an heirloom, it's usually been bred for many generations for taste and texture.
Okay, so a lot of the beans that we might buy in the shop, they're not going to grow that plant. That's what we're saying.
They might or they might not. It's hard to know. I mean, those are, we call those commodity beans, and there's a place for them, and they feed a lot of people, so they're fine. But it's just, it's like heirloom tomatoes when you first had that homegrown variety that wasn't from the grocery store. It's an epiphany, really.
So heirloom bean, that makes me think, where did this all this come from? I mean, what was the first bean that was eaten?
Well, it was probably in like a garbanzo or a lentil or something in the Middle East. Hmm. But here in the Americas, the oldest, they were actually the people in Oaxaca were really advanced in agriculture, and they grew what we call an ayacote or a runner bean. And that was one of the first crops that was domesticated.
I mean, it's a wonderful sort of moment of insight on someone's part to set aside the plant or having consumed the plant to dry the seed, to dry the bean within it, and then to think about what might be done with that.
Well, they must have known they were seeds, but I think the most romantic thing is you go through the whole season, you eat some, you save some, and then you travel to Mozambique or somewhere and you start all over again, and you can just keep going around the world spreading this really interesting food that's a great source of protein. And we have a lot of people who associate it with the Depression or poor people food, and it's really fun getting people to get excited about an ingredient that they've taken for granted, I think.
And look, an ingredient that is suited by the times. I mean, we're looking for protein choices, aren't we, I think, in many places for many people. And beans, beans raise their heads. They put their hand up and say, try me.
Try me, yes. And the heirlooms tend to be really beautiful, actually. It looks like someone hand-paints them. And my theory is it's at the end of the season, the beans turn from white to these incredible colors, and it's almost like nature saying, I'm pretty, save me. And I think it doesn't work for me, but I think it works for beans.
You can't blame you for trying. Your heirloom search, now that takes you to Mexico. Why is that the ideal place for this quest?
Well, common beans like red kidney beans, runner beans, they're all, the origins is Mesoamerica, so Mexico and Central America, and that's really where they're all from. And culturally, they're just still completely relevant there. So it's really fun. I mean, my idea of a good time is to go to a Mexican market and try and find some new beans. And almost every time I do.
It's sort of an inexhaustible supply of new varieties.
Yes, and also they cross, so even though you can breed them, they'll still be heirlooms if they've been bred through enough generations and they can become stable. It's very exciting.
How can you tell? I mean, when you're at that market somewhere in rustic Mexico, how do you know that this one that I've just seen on that stall is a new and different heirloom variety?
Well, it would be new and different to me. I mean, they probably bred it or crossed at some point, and then if they're bringing it to market, it's something stable. And usually it's an older woman sitting on a mat. And I look around and think, oh, nothing. Oh, goodness, that's a good one. And I get very excited. And it's a lot of fun.
It's sort of like secondhand store kind of finding the gem.
No, it is. And what's really sweet is, I think, Mexicans are confused why we're such bad neighbors here in the United States. And then here is this fat gringo going down there validating completely the most integral part of their diet that no one seems to care about. I think everybody gets kind of a kick out of it.
So you're sort of a cultural ambassador against the temper of your times.
A little bit. I do my part, I think.
The thing about Central American food, Mexican food, and surrounding countries. I want you to walk us through this idea of the Columbian Exchange, because this is an amazing gift that this part of the world gave the world, but it perhaps didn't get so much in return.
Well, they got pork, so I think, you know, everything's forgiven on that level. But before that, you know, beans, chilies, corn, I mean, chocolate.
Tomatoes.
Yeah, exactly. Although, to give the Italians credit, they took them and bred them from something that was completely different. So the Europeans really were master breeders of seeds. I think a Mexican tomato... I say I have to say tomato, don't I? But they, I got self-conscious about it.
You can say tomato and I'll say tomato.
All right, I think there's a song in there.
Let's not go to potatoes.
No. But it's an exciting thing for everybody. How's that?
We are used to this process of food coming from this part of the world, I guess, is the shorthand here. So you're giving this a new lease on life.
Yes, and the interesting thing, these products were great, but the older versions tend to have been much more interesting, except for the tomato. But the older potatoes are much more interesting than what McDonald's uses to make their fries. Beans on toast is a famous thing, but if you use heirloom beans, it's another thing. And there's a lot more interesting heirloom food. And I'm not saying to go all heirloom or to give up commodities or modern farming, but there's a place at the table, literally, for some of this stuff. Like, we have a bean called Rio Zape, and it looks like a pinto bean, which is a pretty common bean in most modern Mexican food, but it has hints of chocolate, it has hints of coffee, it looks like someone hand-painted it, and it's like, I don't understand why this isn't more popular. Well, and the reason is because it's harder to grow. So we have to charge more, but the yield's less, but the payoff is the flavor.
And developing that flavor and developing that taste for that flavor, I'm guessing the next stage there is being careful in how those beans are cooked.
Yes, except for, you know, people, there's a lot of mystery about it, and some people think you have to soak them for 12 hours and don't put any salt in. I mean, there's a lot. It's like people who drink martinis, they feel like their way is the only way. They're not very open-minded. Mm. But I'm sort of an infidel. I'll cook beans a million ways. So,
well, I got to ask, what's your favorite bean?
Well, then I have to always ask, which is your favorite child? I mean, you can't really say that. But honestly, we have about 25 varieties we grow here in California and about 10 that we import from Mexico. And we also have a retail store here in Napa, just outside of San Francisco. And the staff will cook beans every day. And it sounds stupid, but it's like my favorite bean's the last one I ate. It's like, oh, I forgot about this one. This one's great. And some of them have thin skins. We call it pot liquor, the bean broth. And a lot of times in the afternoon, I'll just go into the store and take a head of bean broth. And I'm a confirmed omnivore, but we do them pretty much vegan at the store. There really isn't any reason to use meat with them.
And the store itself, I mean, this must be a bit of a feast of color and size. I mean, describe that range for us.
We probably have 5 varieties of white beans, believe it or not, but one has a thin skin, one's really huge, one's super creamy, one almost tastes like dairy. It's kind of amazing. And then they go up, you know, to the brown beans, the black beans. Even within black beans, we've got 2 varieties. And then, like I said, there's probably 10 or 15 that really look like they've been hand-painted. And it is very colorful. And then, just to make things really confusing, I have a collection of Mexican movie posters from the 1940s. So it's a very colorful store.
The color doesn't end with the actual appearance of the beans. Some of the names are extraordinary. I'd like, if I may, Steve, 250 grams of Eye of Goat, if you would.
Yeah, Eye of the Goat's a beautiful bean, and it needs no help, I always say. We call that the You'll Be Back bean, because when you try that one comes back. There's Good Mother Stollard, and everybody always wants to know who she was, and I have no idea. We don't name them. We just grow them. So,
the names are a traditional as well.
Yes, yeah. There was one I made up very early in my career. So we've been doing this 17 years now, and it came back and bit me so hard I will never be creative again. I mean, these really are historical beans, and they deserve a proper name, and so that's what we do now. I respect that.
17 years. I mean, people back then must have thought you were, you know, sort of doing something rather eccentric, I put it to you.
Well, I started at farmers markets, and I was the loneliest guy you could imagine.
You were the bean guy.
Yeah, or people would come up and say, ooh, I love nuts. Ooh, beans, yuck. I mean, they'd think that they were flavored nuts, so it was very hard. But, you know, we have this restaurant, French Laundry, here, and it's arguably one of the most important restaurants in the United States. And the chef, Thomas Keller, came by. And once he came by, then every chef, who was a sheep, really, would come by. It's like, oh, what did Thomas get? And they all started buying that bean. And little by little, it dawned on me that beans shouldn't be marketed as a health food. It really should be, I hate the word foodie, but it really should be geared towards chefs and people who are really passionate about food. And if you can win those people over, then, you know, that is the trickle down that works, I think.
And I guess the rule of thumb for the home buyer is to, you know, be adventurous, to seek, you know, look around.
Yeah, I'm not sure what beans you all have available, but
we have baked.
All right, we're going to work on this. I think we need to bring heirloom beans to Australia.
Is it a tricky thing to sort of move around the world? I mean, you're importing from Mexico. This would be, I imagine, a difficult commodity to freight to other countries.
Yes, because of the seed part aspect of it. But you also then think, I mean, it was like pulling teeth getting my fellow Americans to eat these. It's like, I can't imagine going to another country where I'm not 100% culturally sensitive and to try and convince them, like, no, you want to give up delicious shrimp and eat beans. I mean, I have no idea if that would work or not. The weird thing is, I'm telling you, from Australia and Canada are the two countries we get more requests for than anywhere. Maybe it's worth looking into.
Maybe there'll be someone listening who will take up this cudgel on behalf of Australian bean eaters and will swamp us with heirloom varieties. Steve, thank you, and strength to your arm.
Okay. Thank you. It's been great.
Steve Sando, he's the man behind Rancho Gordo. What do they do? Well, they of bringing the wonders of heirloom bean varieties to American tables, maybe here, maybe soon. I think that would be a fine thing. Blueprint, here on RN.